Blog Talk Radio.
Almost live from somewhere in Nashville, Tennessee, Regime Entertainment presents It's Not Me, It's You, the show where the good, the bad, and the ugly of relationships are discussed from both genders' point of view. And now here's your host, John.
Hey, good evening. Welcome to Nashville. It's Not Me, It's You, because it's a wonderful Thursday night. We've been having some great weather here in Nashville the last couple of days, and I think we have a really interesting show tonight titled Dating and Jesus. But before we get going, we're going to do a little bit different tonight. Our music is going to be here, and, you know, as we do from time to time, tonight it's going to be with Six Wire, but we have kind of a faith theme tonight since we're talking about dating and Jesus. So our music tonight from Six Wire is called Saving Grace. Enjoy.
If I had never failed, lost the wind in my sails, I'd have never needed redemption. If I hadn't lost my way, I'd have never been saved by an angel. Did I mention it was you? I would have drowned if not for your faith. You gave a lost and lonely man reason to live and the strength to stand. Where would I be without the love I see in your face? You're my saving love. Had eluded me, it excluded me, and I'd lost all of my expectations. Nothing was left for me, I was destined to be alone. But my salvation was in you. You saw the hero beyond the fool. You gave a lost and
hello, John. Hello, hello.
Okay, now we're good.
Hello.
Hi, Heather.
Hi,
sorry about
how
that.
Are you?
That was a technical issue on my side. It was not her fault. So let's start over again because we can. That's the beauty of it being my show. All right.
Absolutely.
Again, the music you heard was Saving Grace by Six Wire. And joining me is Ms. Heather McHugh. Heather is a poet and author and an art instructor and an artist herself. And Heather, welcome.
Thank you very much, John.
Yeah, sorry about that earlier. So as I was saying before, but nobody could hear me because of the technical difficulty on my end, the you know, we were talking about this topic the other night a little bit, and, you know, it came about because the, you know, the number one reason people stay together, couples stay together, especially here in the South in the Bible Belt, is their faith walk, their belief in God, the belief that they are heading in the same direction together. So it doesn't matter their age difference or their background or anything else that goes on. They are together in their faith. That makes them happier, more content, and easier to get along with. You agree with that so far?
Right, and you're purely talking statistically, correct?
Statistically, on people that I know, for the most part, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, the question comes about how do single people like you and I, for instance, you know, meet somebody who meets our physical requirements and our emotional requirements and our fun requirements, but also has the same faith walk. Now, you know, I've been on Christian Mingle before, and I wasn't really successful or really didn't like, you know, the way it was structured and the way it was going. But on the flip side, I have a very good friend of mine who found, you know, the woman of his dreams on there. You can always meet somebody at church. And, you know, I was talking to a young lady the other night who met her current boyfriend at seminary. So, I mean, you know, that kind of situation you're going to have. But when you're out in the secular world, how does one meet, you know, somebody that will, you know, that they will be happy with? I mean, do you have some thoughts on that before we proceed?
Well, I definitely think it's difficult. I think, dang, nothing ever prepares you for, you know, proceeding on forward in life and thinking about finding somebody that's compatible to you, and especially when it comes to your faith. I think that when you have some sort of a faith base, it becomes, you know, elemental to who you are in relationship. And so it's a difficult thing. I'm not really a fan of the whole internet thing just because of it seems so impersonal, but I, like you, know many people who have met, married, and are completely head over heels in love with people they've met on the internet. So, you know, I think that you can't be a recluse. You have to live life. You have to enjoy life as a single person. And, you know, I think that the more you put yourself out there and in situations where you know there's going to be people who are not necessarily seeking shallow existence, but, you know, seeking things in life that are deeply fulfilling, you're going to find somebody perhaps that will be deeply fulfilling in relationship with you.
Yeah. And that's,
at least my fingers are crossed.
Well, we all are. We all have our fingers and toes and eyes and everything crossed, but arms and sometimes even our legs are crossed, right? So,
Exactly.
And we'll get to that second half of the show for y'all who are interested in hearing that part of it. But some interesting statistics that I pulled from, you know, the always accurate and impressive internet is similar to this. At this point, this day and age, approximately, and I don't know how they even figure these numbers, but around 5 million couples cohabitate. This is up from 1 million couples over 25 years ago. And that doesn't take into account couples who don't live together, but, you know, might as well because they're at each other's places so often. Some additional statistics, half of unmarried women between the ages of 25 and 39 have lived with a partner at some time. Half of all marriages are preceded by living together. That sounds accurate?
I do. I really do. I think, you know, to me it seems kind of low from what my observation has been.
And it may very well be.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we've always kind of had this stigma on cohabitation in the United States as opposed to other countries. I think other countries have been very, you know, open and accepting of cohabitation for a very long time. And there's still, for some reason, this stigma, whether it's social stigma or spiritual stigma, that this just is not a good thing. Or, you know, for some reason makes you, you know, immoral or a bad person.
Right.
So the statistics don't surprise me. And I would probably say if we lived in a society of honest, open people, it's probably much higher than that.
I would agree. I mean, and you know, I think the rule is if you're at the other person's house more than three nights a week and you have some clothes and a toothbrush there, you're living together.
Yeah, the toothbrush just clinches the deal for me.
Well, yeah, I mean, because you don't want to sleep over with bad breath. I mean, nobody likes that. And you certainly don't want
right.
to use each other's toothbrush, you know, the other person's toothbrush, because that's, you know, you got to keep some things personal, you know? So
sure.
That's just my, my opinion. I don't know anything. But there were some studies that were talked about in this article that I read. And I read them again, and I read them the third time. And I'm like, no, I think they need to be switched. So I'm going to tell you what it says in these studies. And, you know, I mean, it's like the government says. Who is the government? Who? What person, what individual? Where did these studies come from? I don't know, but we're going to roll them out there anyway. Studies almost always find that cohabitation before marriage is associated with a higher divorce risk, ranging from 33% to pretty much going to happen, risk of divorce. Depression among cohabitators are more than three times higher than couples who are married. Women in cohabitating relationships are twice as likely to suffer physical abuse as women who are married. There were two studies, well, I don't want to talk about that one because that's really bad, but couples who cohabitate before marriage report less marital happiness and more conflict after they get married, which is in contrast to couples who marry as virgins or people who don't live together, whichever way you want to. Men who marry as a virgin are 37% likely to get divorced. Women who marry as virgins are 24% likely to be divorced. Those who wait to have sex, and we're going to talk about this throughout the show, those who wait to have sex until they're married and remain faithful in marriage, which is the key thing, report higher levels of life satisfaction compared to adults who engage in premarital or adulterous sex. Okay, adulterous, well, yeah, maybe duh, but premarital, we're going to have to talk about that one. And the last one is those who wait to have sex and are faithful to their spouse also report notably higher happiness scores, whatever that is. So I guess the bottom line is, to me, those would be switched. Now, you know, I believe in God, and I read the Bible and all that stuff. And, you know, women who save themselves for marriage, good for them. Okay, level of respect. Now, go ahead and share with me your thoughts on what I just read, and then I want to get into a story I read that somebody in that position wrote. So go ahead, Heather, and share your thoughts on what I just read.
Yeah, I think it's interesting what you the statistics that you were stating. I think that it would be even more interesting to see those or hear those statistics divided by gender. As far as the cohabitation, I think you said or stated one statistic that said, you know, there's the depression in cohabitation. And I have to say this as a woman, and I definitely am kind of stating this from a spiritual standpoint, knowing that a woman, and I really have found this even in friends that may not be, you know, followers of Christ, Christians, churchgoers, having a deep spiritual life. And that is that I think a woman just really has this innate desire to be claimed, to be pursued and claimed. And I think that in cohabitation, it kind of leaves this ambiguity that kind of gives perhaps this subconscious or unconscious message to a woman that, yeah, you're good enough to live with, but heck, I am not going to make that quote-unquote, commitment to you. So I could definitely see how cohabitation might or could in fact lead to kind of this depression or, you know, this uneasy and questioning. I think it's in that questioning, that uncertainty, that kind of leads a woman or, you know, speaking as a woman, into that place that just the uncertainty and the ambiguity can kind of lead you into that place of depression. So I think that's interesting. You know, dang, you rattled off a lot of statistics.
Yeah.
And I think that they don't always necessarily coexist as truth. I think that there are bits and portions of them that I went, yeah, I guess. And there are other parts of what you read that made me go, yeah, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Yeah, see, I look at it this way, though. When you're talking about the depression, the depression would come from unhappiness in the relationship. Agreed?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, the beauty of living together and not being married is you can pretty much go anytime you want to without any, you know, legal recourse. If it's not working out, get out. If you're married and you have that situation, then you have you have to get lawyers involved, God forbid. And you and I both know how much fun that is. So we want to make sure, exactly. We want to, you know, I mean, that's why I kind of thought those things would be flipped, because if you're in a bad relationship after you get married, and again, I mean, I want to kind of keep it on the Christian faith part of it here, but you know, you can pray all you want, you can go to church all you want, you can be with, you know, your church family and all that, but if you're not working out one-on-one, then, you know, how do you get out? I mean, you can get out, and it's okay to get out. But again, it's easier to do it if you're cohabitating versus, you know, if you're already married.
Yeah, but don't you think? I think it's that ease that just, you know, whether you can reason it or logic it, you know, make logical sense of the fact, oh, yeah, well, cohabitation is so much easier. Or cohabitation, you know, if it just doesn't work out, no big deal. I pack my bag and I'm gone. But I think that here's the problem, is that seldom do the psyche and the heart think on the same plane.
True.
And I think that while it makes logical sense, for the heart of a woman, it's a really difficult place to tread. I think you feel a woman desires commitment, and it's been my experience that a man is kind of nonchalant about it, unless it's somebody that he truly wants to be with. So I don't know. I often say the intellect and the heart and the way that they process things are like two arteries of the same heart. You know, they're both parts of who you are. And it's a really difficult thing to make that division because inevitably some part of you will suffer or die. So as far as cohabitation goes, yeah, I think it makes perfect logical sense to me. And yet at the end of the day, you know, I think oftentimes it is the heart that gets involved that causes trouble.
Right. Well, and the other flip side of it is, you know, I mean, it's not quote unquote the Christian way to cohabitate before you're married. You know, it doesn't flow right. You know what I mean? And sometimes it doesn't feel right. And again, that's totally up to the couple. I mean, that's the thing. You know, when it comes to what your beliefs are and what you want to do with your life, it is totally up to you. You and, you know, the two people to decide what's best for them. So let's assume that the two people are not going to live together or sleep together or whatever together unless they both consent to doing it that way, and that's their choice.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay.
Right.
So, you know, so that, you know, I mean, again, we flip back to finding somebody who is going in the same direction with you faith-wise than just, you know, regular, you know, non-believing people who are just gonna jump in and, you know, and go for it. Which, you know, sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. I think there's more people that are going to last; their relationships will last longer if they have that, you know, that common bond of, you know, believing in God and doing not necessarily everything the Bible says, because I don't think that's necessarily the right way either, but, you know, at least as much as they agree they should, and that's where they're walking in the same direction.
Yeah, and I think that it's interesting. I was having a conversation with a 20-something-year-old last week, and the fact of the matter is, and they brought up some really good points about the fact that there's just so much gray area in the Bible.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think that as a person, for myself, as a person that, you know, a person of faith, a person that loves Jesus, that deeply desires meaningful relationship, I think that it takes on a whole new appearance once you find yourself single again, as opposed to kind of your whole ideal and the idealization of what relationship looked like prior to ever being in a marital relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think that that's a factor too. At the end of the day, yeah, absolutely. We have free will. It is completely up to the individual. At the end of the day, up to the couple. And I find myself more and more just kind of stuck in the gray areas of what the Bible says and what is Western societies and civilizations, you know, what are they implying upon me that the Bible doesn't really say, and what does God really say? So it's a strange place to navigate.
And
I think you have to make...
Oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I think you just have to make peace with it within yourself.
You do, and then that is based on your personal relationship with God and, you know, what you want as an individual in your life. Now, that kind of brings me to the next story I wanted to talk about. And there was an article, ironically, after I, thought about the topic for this show that I saw online, and it was written by a woman who's, I think, in her 30s now. And it talked about how when she was 10 years old, she committed to the church that she would save herself for her wedding night and be a virgin throughout, you know, until she got married. And she wrote this article about that experience of growing up. I mean, she made the decision at age 10 when she didn't even know what boys were, you know, for the most part, as far as that goes. She was, you know, playing with dolls and doing this kind of thing. And I'm, of course, paraphrasing as I remember what, you know, what was in there. But as she went into her teenage years and then her, you know, in college life, she had difficulty trying to maintain that, but everybody respected her for doing it, which I think, you know, society nowadays respects people who are saving themselves, who are still virgins. Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Great for you. Good for you. Because, you know, the sexual revolution is all about that, you know, and we're all sex crazed and that's all people are doing or sleeping around, but good for you as a 17-year-old or as a 19-year-old or whatever, saving yourself for marriage. Great. But what she said was that when she finally got married, her wedding night was a disaster, because what she ended up realizing was that from age 10 to the time she got married, she did not own her body. The church did. It wasn't her decision to do anything anymore. It was the church's decision. And that really caused a problem for her emotionally. And, you know, what she wrote was you know, really interesting, to the point where she said, you know, her wedding night was a disaster. After she was done, she went into the bathroom and cried for like an hour, because she knew when she was going back home and back to church, everybody was going to be looking at her, knowing that she was no longer pure. But she was married, so it was okay. She was no longer pure. So what happened is that her emotional state was so messed up because of all that she want her husband to touch her. She did, because the Bible says, you know, you have to, take care of your husband and, you know, whatever that part is, you know, do what you're supposed to do as the wife. Now, it doesn't say, you know, it says women should be pure going into marriage. It doesn't say a damn thing about the husband or about the man. Men don't have to be pure to the Bible, just women. Okay. Well,
yeah, what's that all about?
Well, I mean, who are we going to, you know, who are we going to be impure with if y'all aren't, you know what I mean? So somebody's breaking some rules out there is all I'm saying. But anyway, getting back to this poor woman, she finally, after a couple of years of just kind of cringing, she finally told him, and he was really supportive. He said, I'm so sorry. I had no idea you felt that way. And she ended up going to counseling and getting therapy and, meds or whatever. And now she says she doesn't go to church anymore. It so destroyed her. She enjoys being with her husband, and she enjoys having sex with her husband, but she can't go back to church because the church does not own her body anymore. And I have never heard that angle ever. And I know it might be, unpopular, as far as the church goes and all that, but, her bottom line, her moral of the whole experience and the whole telling the whole story was that women own their bodies. The church does not. Do whatever you're going to do, and you're not going to be judged, because she wasn't judged by God. She wasn't condemned by God. She wasn't, hated by God. She still was accepted, And I'm not condoning losing your virginity or anything like that, but I guess where I'm going with all this is, and then I'm going to let you talk, I promise, is that, okay, women are brought up in the church to save themselves for marriage. You get married, you lose your virginity, you're married for a while, and then God forbid you get divorced, then what?
That's the question.
Then what? I mean, I know divorced women who want to save themselves for marriage again. Like, why? You already did that once,
Right.
You paid your dues, as it were. So share with me a little about what you thought about that story, and B, what your opinion is about that whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things struck me about that story. The first thing I kept thinking was, when you said that she felt such shame, she felt like she was dirty, she felt all of these things, I just kept thinking to myself, if you really look at it from a Christian perspective, we are all undeserving. We are all impure, but here's where the problem happens. The problem happened that the church or religiosity kind of gives you this, they impose shame upon you, and it's completely opposing the way that Jesus treated people, right? Mm-hmm. And so my thought is that religiosity is so different than relationship. And I think at the bottom line is, at the end of the day, if you have a relationship with God, it's very different than being in a religious environment, being in a church. And I find that to be, straight across the board. I think even moving to the South, Nashville, Tennessee, from California, just the way that the church handles situations, it tends to be this culture of shame, as opposed to God's got you. God made you for desire. You're supposed to enjoy sex because, it feels good and it's pleasurable because that's how God made you. I think that the church seldom thinks about that or even talks about that. On the flip side of it, when you get to this place of saving yourself for marriage. I saved myself for marriage and then, completely unexpectedly found myself single again. And you sit in that place of, well, what now? I saved myself for marriage, but, and I know what the church says about premarital sex, but nobody ever talks about marital sex.
Exactly.
Right. And so it becomes, again, how do you decipher that? How do you navigate that? And I think, again, because there is no black and white addressing postmarital sex, I've been married. I saved myself for marriage, and here I am not married and, still a red-blooded woman who was made with desires, God-given desires, and, how to navigate that from a Christian perspective. What it comes down to is my relationship with God,
right?
Not listening to imposed shame of the church, but really knowing if I'm trusting what I'm reading in the Bible, if I'm trusting my relationship with God, then, I think you have to come to a place of understanding, I think, you know, if you're looking for a fulfilling relationship, flippant sex is never going to take you to fulfilling relationship.
Right, it's not.
And you know, and so I think it's a strange place to navigate in the realm of Christianity. And I wish more people would talk openly about it. I completely talk openly about all of it, but it really makes some people uncomfortable,
mm-hmm.
Especially those people in the church. When you get outside the church and you're talking to friends who are Christians and who, you know, are seeking relationship with God, and yet they find themselves on the other side of saving themselves for marriage,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think there's a general consensus that there's no play-by-play or rule book, and at the end of the day, you know, it's all about the relationship that you're developing, fostering, and building commitment and trust with another human being.
Right. Well, and then you get into the, you know, and then, you know, we'll revert back to the topic at hand in just a minute, but then you get into the, just, you know, like you said, the physical urges that, you know, they're God-given. I mean, they're there. You can't knock it. But, you know, to disregard that in some way is just really hard to do, you know? So, you know, you can't go out and just, what, go ahead, what?
No, right, absolutely. I mean, I think about the fact that, you know, that's how I'm wired. That's how you're wired. It's how we as humans are wired.
Yeah.
You know, we are wired to enjoy sex, whether you're a Christian mm-hmm. or not a Christian. It's just the fact of the matter.
Yeah, even bad sex, or no sex, right? I don't know, but it's as much the sex as it is the intimacy and the, you know, I sound like such a girl. Oh, my God. It's about the, you know, the connection. It's about the, you know, it's not just always about banging. It's just about, you know, having a connection with somebody that you want to do that with. And, you know, especially, you know, when you're younger, it's about banging. Let's be real. It's about getting as much as you can while you can before lightning strikes and, you know, all that hits.
And you find yourself married.
Exactly. Ta-da. But when you're, you know, after you divorce or, you know, separate or your spouse dies, whatever has made you single, you know, then it's about now what? You know, like you said, there is nothing in – but so at this point of our lives, as we're talking, we're not, quote, unquote, young anymore. We're young at heart, but not young chronologically. You know, I know, right? But you need to somehow find somebody who shares that same belief. And whether it is just – you know, pure luck, or you do it scientifically through, you know, through a dating site, or you just leave it as we say, in God's hands, and somebody will land on your doorstep when you least expect it. But it's all about timing.
Yeah.
It's all about, you know, where you are in your life and where they are in theirs, if it's going to work out or not.
Yeah, I think so. But I think there's this whole other element that, American culture and society in general kind of elude, and that is the ever-present need for communication. We just don't do it in relationship. We're not taught how to communicate openly, because it's always about, you know, you can't offend the other person. You've got to, you know, you definitely don't want to say something wrong. Well, what about the fact that we can have an open dialogue about something and leave the emotionality out of it? You know, and I think this is a part of maturity, but I think it's a seldom taught it's a seldom taught skill, you know, how to communicate openly without getting all flustered about it. So I think it's elemental when you start dating somebody or seeing somebody, that you have open dialogue about, hey, here's where I stand on A, B, and C. Tell me what you're thinking, what are your spiritual convictions?
Sooner than later.
For example, if the woman is thinking, okay, I saved myself for marriage, been there, done that, I'm in this relationship, I'm extremely attracted to this man, you know, I feel this soul connection to this person, and he is reciprocating, but all of a sudden he puts the kibosh on intimacy, it's going to leave somebody flustered and aggravated and full of angst. I find myself talking to other single again women, and I think it's an interesting phenomenon that we as women so often equate intimacy with a physical connection and being desired. And so I think this is where communication is really important, because if you're not going to have sex, at least a woman needs to know, you are so desirable to me. I want to be with you and go to that place more than anything. However, this is why I'm not, you know? And so I think if you can't have a dialogue like that, you know, there's going to be a lot of things that are misconstrued in relationship.
Add one thing to that, though. This is when I will be, you know?
Exactly.
So we have a kind of, we have a light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak, because, you know, we are still men after all. So, you know, I always joke about this. There's one dating site that I was on a long time ago that actually asked the question, how many dates should you go on or would you go on before you slept with somebody? 1 to 2, 3 to 5, or 6 or more. Those were your three choices. Okay. You know, everybody chose 6 or more, but then they say, would you have a one night stand? They'd say yes. I'm like, which one is it? So, I think there was a little conflict of interest going on there. If you answered 6 or more, that would indicate that you had more of a Christian mind and more of a faith, a good, strong faith, because you want to wait until you are sure that this is going to lead to something, you know, before you get into it. Now, am I a fan of, you know, I'm not a fan of not test driving the car before you buy it. You know what I mean? So you have to kind of do that, you know, and so, you know, it's kind of a very odd situation, like you said, very much a gray area. It's so gray that you think it's going to thunderstorm. It's just, you know, and nobody will explain it. There's
exactly.
There's no pastors out there that will explain it. There's no, you know, there's no books to explain it. So you have to probably make up your own mind, no matter what your age is.
Yeah, and it's a difficult thing, because then how do you navigate, you know, everything you've been told, especially if you grew up in the church. You know, I think that nobody ever says, oh, here's how to prepare for X, Y, and Z. You find yourself in this position and you go, well, what now? And this is the very time where we need pastors or, you know, counselors speaking into these difficult areas. But there's such a stigma, I think, around sex, around, you know, all these kind of no-nos that we're supposed to discuss within the framework of Christianity.
Well,
so,
you know what? I mean, none of us would be here without it, so get over it, people, you know?
Exactly.
Right? I don't know. It's just,
right.
I don't know very many people that were born out of a test tube, so, you know, we all have it. We all did it. And it kind of, it reminds me, and from time to time when I need to remind myself, there's an old Brad Paisley song that called Fell in Love. It's about, you know, nobody would be here unless these two people fell in love. You know,
right.
The guy who you know, won a Nobel Peace Prize for curing cancer, whatever, he would not be there without his parents. You know, the whole five-generation family reunion would not be there without two people starting it all off. So it's just very... You know, it's very much a fine line. We have to remember where we came from, you know. And,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, our roots, as it were. So.
Right, but don't you think also there's this stigma of, you know, that, I mean, really, are we kidding ourselves and saying that marital sex was never hot and steamy, you know, or just for procreation? It's kind of like that's the dumbing down of, the physical experience that the church has put on it. And dang, I don't think that's how God intended for us to enjoy sex.
No, I would agree with that 100%. But, you know, you see, and you know, and that's the stigma, and that's the, what's the word I'm looking for? That is the facade, I'll call it. You see people dressed up, you see them, you know, at church, and you see them with, you know, collars buttoned all the way up, and you see, you know, long skirts to the ankles, and you see very conservative, and you see very, very God-fearing and very, you know, polite and all that. But what you don't see is how those people are behind their front door. And,
yeah.
You know, a lot of people may be wild and crazy when they get out of that situation. They let their hair down. You know, there's a lot of people that don't practice what they preach. Let's be honest. And, you know, and that's just the way, I mean, that's always been that way from, you know, the old days in the 40s, 50s, and 60s to even, you know, to now especially. So, you know, it's part of the changing world. It's just how quickly it gets out now because of social media and 24/7 news channels. We hear about it faster than we did back, you know, 50 years ago. So,
yeah, but
people still do it.
Right, absolutely. And hasn't it always been the case that these people that have the facade and live in the facade, which, you know, is a pretty shallow existence, of being extremely reverent or pious, they're always the ones who want to throw their two cents in about how you should conduct yourself.
Right.
When they really have never walked even a block in your shoes, let alone a mile.
Right. So what do you do? Who do you believe? Who do you listen to? Listen to your God, listen to your heart, listen to your partner, and, you know, hopefully everything will work out for the best for everybody, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's really what everybody is hoping for.
I hope so, too. But any additional thoughts or comments?
You know, I think at the end of the day, we're all just kind of under the same umbrella of being kind of this broken mess of humanity, and the sooner we just kind of go, hey, you know what, I'm a broken mess, and somebody's able to go, guess what, me too, I've got baggage, you've got baggage, let's just open the baggage and leave it here so we can move forward and enjoy each other without the baggage.
Yep.
And the only thing that opens that suitcase up is communication. So, you know, I think that that's really the key to having a healthy, successful, and happy relationship of any kind, married or otherwise.
Right. That and your faith. So,
absolutely.
You know, share with each other what you have going on. You know, talk about it. Pray together. Whatever you need to do. And, you know, this is a deviant for me on this show, you know, going into the whole spiritual religious area. I mean, while I am a believer, I don't bring it onto the show because, you know, our audience is very vastly different. But I thought it was a really interesting topic about, you know, bringing that part of it into the relationship. So a couple of final pieces of thought from me. Just like Heather said, communicate with one another, talk about, especially when you're just starting out, you know, what are you looking for, you know, after the first few dates, when you know you want to spend some more time together, what are you looking for, you know, where's your head, where's your timing, and, you know, how long do we have to date before we jump into bed together, okay? Find that out, because the one thing to remember, guys, is that the lady is in charge, okay? You ask her out, she says yes or no. You want to sleep with her, she says yes or no. You want to marry her, she says yes or no. Don't think it's going to be any different, okay? And ladies, take that advice, because I, as a guy, am going to respect somebody a lot more who answers yes or no and knows exactly what she wants. So take that with you. Go to church. Meet somebody. Not necessarily at church, but, you know, have fun with it all. So that's going to wrap it up for tonight. Apologize for the technical issues getting us started. It turned out to be on my end, not Heather's. Usually it's always the guy's fault, right?
You're learning right? That. Oh, my
God. I am learning fast, aren't I, right? I want to thank my special guest, Heather McHugh. Heather will be back on the show again sometime very soon because we have a very special project we're working on. And we're going to be talking about that a little bit more. So, Heather, thank you, love, for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Love
being
pleasure.
Here and talking about the sticky, messy parts of life.
Oh, there's going to be lots of sticky, messy parts to talk about as we proceed. So, anyway, join me again next Thursday night, 6:30 p.m. Central Time. The topic will be on the website here by the end of the weekend. Join me, go to itsnotmeradio.com, like the Facebook page, join us on Twitter, and we have some YouTube stuff coming up again soon.
I am on my way out because I have been challenged to do the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge. So I'm going to go dump a bucket of ice water on my head tonight for ALS awareness. So you can check that out. I'll put that video up on the website as well in the coming days whenever I get recover from my pneumonia. So everybody have a great night. And as usual, peace out.
Cheers.